And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of March 21st, 2021, which I guess is just about the spring equinox. And we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tingle, who's going to tell us all about the spring equinox. I do, Mariah.
The days are getting a lot longer, which I like, and maybe some of the nice warm temperatures will come in.
Yes. So, talking about climate is quite an interesting experience, because 1 week you're talking about train fares on the MBTA, and the next week you're talking about world governments, and the relevant topics span an enormous, enormous range. This week, we're going to talk about world government, believe it or not, right? Let me set up the context for this discussion, which is quite interesting. So, author named Niles Gilman, who we've talked about before in something called Noema Magazine, put up an article basically proposing questions about how to govern the planet. And his thesis is essentially that the nation state, which is a fancy word for all the countries of the world, that is a mechanism, a functionality, a setup that is guaranteed to fail because the problems facing us now, like COVID and climate change, are planetary in scale, but express themselves locally in many different ways. All right, Mariah, did you get a chance to scan into the article? What's the?
It's a fascinating article. Really, just interesting writing and points that I've never really kind of thought of. So it's a good thought exercise, and one of the big points of it is that, the climate change doesn't know state boundaries. It doesn't know nation boundaries, country boundaries. Like it's a physical, it's a physics thing, and we're out of balance with the physics of the planet. And it's not going to stop just because the United States is only controlling one portion of the climate. It just doesn't work that way.
And the same goes true for COVID, right? And in many ways for like the economics of the planet. And in fact, he raises this question about, the coming threat of artificial intelligence, right, is going to be this transnational problem. How are we going to manage that?
That blew my mind. I was like, good point.
so the it's a carefully constructed argument, but the first point of Gilman's argument is that the scale of the problems we face are transnational, and COVID and climate are the kinds of things that no single country can manage. But then he goes on to talk about the idea of a nation state, that is to say the United States or an island in the Pacific, right? Vanuatu is a nation state, right? It says it's a political construction that, curiously enough, we have ended up with this model of the nation state as being the most effective way to govern the planet, kind of by accident. And that it's actually quite interesting. For better or worse, all right? I mean, the fact is that at the end of World War II, much of the world's population was not part of a nation state, right? And it was like India was owned by England, right? Much of colonial Africa, South America were owned by other countries, right or wrong, right? That's not the point. I mean, but there was the governing structures after World War II became that everyone wanted to have their own little nation state. That seemed to be the default way to go. And he's saying that doesn't work, right?
Yeah. Right. It's ineffective in that it can't address the problems that we need immediately.
Because the nation states can't. So it's quite an interesting proposition. What the author says is that, Minneapolis and Moscow as localities have more in common than Minneapolis and Los Angeles, right? So Minneapolis and Los Angeles are all inside the United States, right? And would be competing for the resources to say, you know, my problem's worse, or and not able to help each other or learn from each other. Whereas, you know, you think Miami in the United States should be partnered up with a place like Jakarta, which is also sinking under the oceans, right? They have the same sort of local expression of climate change, right? That the nation state does not support the communication back and forth in the local place. And at the same time, the nation state cannot, everyone is afraid. Remember the movie Treasure of Sierra Madre? I mean, it was right. It's Humphrey Bogart, right? They all go up and they get this treasure. And on the way down, the three cowboys start to mistrust each other. And in the end, they all kill each other and the treasure's lost, right? It's the same way nation states can't surrender their sovereignty to anyone, right? Every nation state. And the article maintains that the United Nations was only built with 70 nations in mind. So in 1953, when they built the UN building, they only had 70 offices, right? And now we're up to 192 countries, which is great, but it also is a commitment to a particular kind of politics where every one of those 192 people is autonomous. People, every nation state is autonomous and has its rights and freedoms, and that just doesn't work. Look at the Paris Accord, right? They couldn't get everyone together in one place at one time.
Yeah.
So he
brings up this idea, the principle of subsidiarity, which is a word I had to practice saying a couple times because it's not a usual one in my vocabulary, but the idea of subsidiarity, which is where you have social and political issues that are dealt with at the most immediate level consistent with their most adequate resolution. So you should allocate powers up from states to planetary institutions if those problems govern planetary problems, and then the powers that should go down are the ones that govern local problems. So it's an idea of kind of going up and down based on what can most adequately resolve whatever problem you're facing.
Right, an interesting concept. It's a great, and I think that's one of the interesting things about this article is that, you know, we'll get around to the reality of the ultimate ideas, but some of these ideas do apply, right? I mean, it's quite clear that we should be dealing with climate change at the level of the kind of problem that climate change is, both at the planetary level, which we'll get back to, and the local level. And I think one of the points the author makes is that this famous, it's called C40, which is the letter C for 40 cities, right, that are all trying to work on climate change and trade ideas, right? It's kind of this network of people with the similar problems working together.
Right,
it's an example of the subsidiarity thing where the problem that is addressed at the scale that people can kind of manage it. So, yeah, the subsidiarity thing, and the way that works in the article is that the author is arguing that the nation state has essentially failed to address both the planetary scale and the local problems. The whole concept of nation state, right? Whether you love your country or not, the whole setup is not working. And so this principle of subsidiarity applied to nations would say that the nations should be sacrificing some kind of sovereignty to some other higher level body to do the planetary stuff and devolving power down to the localities like the cities to do more stuff at the level where they can get things done, right? So it's like, okay, bend your head around that one for a while. I mean, you need a cup of coffee to sort of stare at the clouds for a minute to sort of get that one into place. But then the author goes on with another sort of, I don't know, it was an intriguing idea. So the line that caught me was saying that, the globe is not the planet. Okay. The globe is not the planet. What does he mean by that? He talks about the idea that, so we talk about global problems and planetary problems almost interchangeably, right? Global warming is a global problem. It's also a planetary problem. The names seem the same. But in many ways, the ideas of globalization, globalizing trade, globalizing all kinds of things, primarily talks about a kind of human-centric view of the globe, right? It's what humans are doing to integrate themselves tighter and tighter into, you know, the everything. You can fly from Bombay to Edmonton, right? We're a tight-knit globalized society. That's different from talking about the planet, right? Which is, and the article points out, the planet is not human-centered. The planet is indifferent to whether or not humans are on it, right? Yep. We have to sort of live on this planet. And the issues of the planetary things are not human-centric, right? Humans are not the most important thing in the planetary scheme.
Right. We're just tenants on the earth with a, you know, the landlord is Gaia or whoever.
Well, let me just quote for a second. Taken together, the scientific discoveries about, what humans are doing to the planet, these discoveries decenter our sense of our place in the universe. Like Galileo and Darwin in an earlier era, the planetary, in quotation marks, represents a paradigm shift, right? It's not adequate to assume that, as globalization assumes, that the humans are the top of the hierarchy, right? We humans are just part of this, what do they call it, the biogeochemical ferment of the earth, right? We're just, and so the argument is that planetary issues are things that are bigger than humans, but we're part of it, right? And that we are somehow called upon to manage because we have consciousness, right? Did I get anywhere near?
Yeah, no.
That is a huge concept.
Right. And I think that it's sort of, there's this idea too that we think we can kind of, they say we could exert godlike mastery over the biogeochemistry, which we were inextricably entangled. Right. So we think, oh, well, we can't influence it, but we see that we can. Right. We've changed the biogeochemistry drastically, but we don't know how to fix that. We don't know what to do with that. It's like, whoops, we knocked the domino over. Now what are we supposed to do? Because we think we have more power than we actually do. I mean, in some ways, right, we do have a lot of power, but we don't really know how to manage that.
I mean, I keep coming back to Walt Disney's Sorcerer's Apprentice, right? You know a little bit, you know enough to be dangerous, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, all this stuff is happening that you don't know how to manage. And so, again, this is a well-written, interesting article that talks about these different ideas with that, you know, the nation state as a recent political construct after World War II, which, trust me, isn't that long ago, right? That the nation state is this thing that we built up. It could be changed, right? We talk about this concept that we should be solving problems at the scale that's appropriate. And if the scale is a planetary scale and deals with things that are bigger than humans, that's the direction we need to go. And that this whole distinction between a planetary issue and a globalization issue is an interesting one to try and get your head around. And I mean, I wouldn't pretend that my head's around it yet, but it's an interesting thing. And I think what the authors are proposing, and here's where we can say, pshaw, that's a bunch of hokum, right? But basically, what they're saying is, look, what needs to happen is that the nations of the world need to sacrifice some sovereignty up to some higher, I won't say higher power, some higher authority, right? Explicitly more powerful than the Paris Accords, right? Which is all this, the Paris Accords and the UN, these are all creatures of the nation states. We need something that is not subservient to the nation states that can manage these very big issues like global health, right? Global warming, stuff like that. And that's a tough sell. Would you say, do you think that Vladimir Putin's going to sacrifice Russian nationalism for?
I don't even want to begin to think about that. Oh my goodness. But they, you know, they do close with the idea that, he says, faced with our planetary future, the wildest thing of all would be to change nothing. And on that point, I agree with him. I mean, there's no question that this problem is bigger than us, and we've got to figure out how to deal with it. And whether that means some sorts of sacrifices or who knows, but it's certainly something that has to be done. And to address it, we have to do something drastic.
Right. And the baby step is to say, hey, you know what? There's a different way to think about this. You and I, Mariah, have spoken many times about the next system in quotation marks, right? Where are we headed? And it could be that some formulation of what this gentleman's written is.
One of the ideas lying around when we have the disruption.
Yeah. When it comes back, say, okay, yeah. Well, I tell you, I will put up a link to this article. I hope I'm pronouncing everyone's name right. Noema Magazine. It's called Governing in the Planetary Age. It's an interesting read. It's readable. I found it pretty readable.
Yeah.
In addition, I mean, it's big ideas, but it's accessible.
Compelling,
I would say if you get a chance to read it, and then send us a note about how we are going to engineer that much feared science fiction feared global world government that's going to take care of us all. Right, Maria? we'll put that up. We'll put that stuff up on the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. When you do figure out how to save the world this way, send us an email to podcast@massclimateaction.net so that we can share it with other people. You can listen to us. You're probably listening to us on your smartphone using one of the podcast distribution apps. Please ask your friends to listen to us on their favorite podcast distribution app, because I guarantee you they'll find us. We want to thank our good friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support that brings to light all these interesting topics. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. And because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. Oh, Mariah, my head's pounding. Thank you so much for thanks for being here. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.